Season 4, episode 60 of this podcast, and this time we'll be discussing another interesting topic about wearable technology in healthcare. For today's podcast episode, we have invited Dr. Elliot Justin, MD, the CEO and founder of FirmTech Incorporated, based from the United States. As he shares with us his valuable insights on the wearable technology and its relevance to health and wellness, as well as to our digital society. So let's get started. Thank you for listening to FinCircle and welcome to our podcast. Wearable devices holds great promise, particularly for data generation, for cutting-edge health research, and their demand has risen considerably in the last few years. Non-invasive and tumor-grade wearables may provide manifold advantages for health research, and they are generally unobtrusive, less expensive than gold standard research devices, also comfortable to wear, and affordable to consumers. In recent years, the quality and accuracy of wearables have improved, resulting in more clinically approved certifications. And these wearables can measure long-term data in the naturalistic environment of study participants, allowing for ecologic momentary assessments. Therefore, wearables are valuable developments, particularly for generating data for health research in large study populations, and that is global health or other medical related studies. One example of a large study by the Robert Koch Institute, the German Research Institute for Disease Control and Prevention, which aims to tackle the COVID-19 or coronavirus disease pandemic, with anonymous data donations acquired through wearables. On the basis of the study by Radin, researchers used wearable data to calculate the original probability of COVID-19 outbreaks, incorporating data on pulse, physical activity and sleep, as well as weather data. And using a large sample size exceeding 500,000 participants, they forecasted the number of COVID-19 infections for the preceding 4 days. The Apple Heart study is another example that was a breakthrough for showing that wearable devices may detect atrial fibrillation and foster a discussion of potential and limitations with regards to healthcare providers, researchers, and members of the media and economy. In this regard, we have seen some innovative products across the markets as well in areas like health, entertainment, gaming, and fitness. For example, Aura recently partnered with Gucci in order to connect fashion wearables to wellness and to track things like sleep and heart rate. Levi's and Jacquard by Google have created a jacket that has touch and gesture interactivity woven into the sleeve. Ray-Ban Stories is a collaboration project of Ray-Ban and Meta, featuring smart glasses that allows you to capture everything around you by photo or video. There's also a very strong link between erectile dysfunction and heart disease. In fact, several studies have shown that if a man has ED, he has a greater risk of having heart disease. Hence, the introduction of under-wearables like smart cock rings that measures the cardiological vital signs and its correlation to sexual wellness and healthcare. The future of smart wearable technology is mostly linked with interconnectivity among devices and the ability to sync data between wearables and mobile phones, for instance. Energy harvesting is another big domain, and it pertains to converting body heat, movement, or solar energy into power. Innovative companies like APS are working on ambient energy harvesting, processing, and sensing solutions in order to make wireless devices that do not need to be actively charged. Another innovation that Facebook is working is non-invasive sensors that will allow hands-free typing using your brain activity. Other breakthrough innovations relate to haptic technology, which can create an experience by applying forces, vibrations, or motions to control virtual objects. And engineers are working on recreating realistic touch sensations while engaging human-computer interactions. At this stage, there are estimated 640 million wearable technology devices are expected to be shipped worldwide by 2027. In average, 1 in 5 Americans use a smartwatch or fitness tracker or any other type of wearable technology. In 2025, the wireless health monitoring segment of the wearable tech industry is projected to reach $312.4 billion U.S. dollars, according to the recent study by PwC. So the value proposition of wearable technology are really enormous and significant, particularly on health and wellness space. Hence, we need to leverage on it. In today's podcast episode, we'll be talking to Dr. Elliot Justin, the founder and chief executive officer of FirmTech, based from the United States. A distinguished expert in the rapidly evolving wearable industry, with a unique focus on the intersection of sexual wellness and cardiac health. It's an honor and privilege to have you, Dr. Justin, and welcome to FinCircle.
Thanks for the opportunity to be here. I'm looking forward to this conversation very much.
Thank you so much, Dr. Justin, for joining us today. Let's probably start by describing the state of wearable industry today, and where do you think we are going?
Well, the market is really exploding. So we live in this truly golden age of healthcare wearables. So when it comes to wearables, I'm going to focus on the healthcare industry. There's Whoop, Aura, Fitbit, Apple Watch. People are able to monitor their vital signs and get actionable data about their health in real time or when they wake up. Having recently visited a wearable laboratory in Berlin at the Fraunhofer Institute, we saw entire bodysuits, actually high fashion bodysuits, with sensors woven into them. So people be able to monitor their vital signs, their sweat, inflammation of their joints, as they move around. And looking ahead, people are working on haptics, and haptics are basically feelies. I mean, we will have that soon. And there are very positive aspects to what's going on. And there are also certain things that are disturbing, because in the future, people are going to be able to have their primary relationship be virtual. It's hard for you and I to imagine what that type of culture will be. And that culture is coming very soon. But as far as today goes, in addition to these wearables, there's measuring vital signs. There's a gap, and that gap is sexual health. And that's what our company, FirmTech, is about, filling that gap, providing people with what we call the sixth vital sign about every man's most vital organ.
You have a very impressive credentials, Dr. Justin, being an emergency medicine specialist and a health technology consultant in urology, cardiovascular disease, and diabetes. Hence, what are your relevant takeaways from these remarkable experiences?
Well, I started in medicine in 1979, so I've been at this a long time. Unfortunately, I would say that things follow the golden rule in healthcare. And by the golden rule, I don't mean do unto others as you would have done unto you. I don't mean the biblical golden rule. I mean money rules, the gold rules. And as a consequence, a lot of these research, things that are fresh and valuable, take a long time to come into practice. At the academic level, you have what I call grant mining, where people are writing grants to where they think they'll be able to get money. So they're not necessarily thinking about change. They're just thinking about where they can get money to advance their careers. A lot of research are Me Toos, which is basically copycat research with minor tweaks, and they don't really change medical practices. Most recently in the West, we have the influence of politics. We have diversity, equity, and inclusion criteria motivating research. We have research that's trans-focused. And these things might be of some value, but they're really addressing politics rather than scientific needs. In the United States and in the UK, most research is also what we call code-driven. And those, if you can make money from something, you'll research it. If you can't make money from it, and a lot of good things that happen, they don't have money attached to them. They're new, my business happens to be in that area, and we also saw the impact of that, for example, during the recent pandemic. Medications that were effective and now people recognize were effective, they might have been condemned at the time, such as ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine. Well, they weren't new; they were old. They were generic. Whereas the attention and the coercion was focused on getting people to use new therapies that were expensive. Unfortunately, the profit rules and those who not really is holding us back in terms of change. Folks, the last part of my career in emergency medicine, I can tell you that short of a heart attack or a stroke, there are a few emergencies that concern a man as much as not being able to have a satisfactory erection. And in that area, we can see how money has just has shaped things. So, for example, there's very little research indicating that vacuum pumps for increasing the blood flow in the penis. But this research indicates that they're effective, but governments don't pay for it, and they aren't very expensive things, so they don't get researched. Whereas things like penile implants get a lot of money because they're expensive and they're easy to do. Devices on shock therapy is used to treat erectile dysfunction. These therapies cost thousands of dollars. They don't get studied in terms of using them at home, where they might cost tens of dollars, because that's not where the money is. The doctors want to bring people into their offices and do procedures. So I'm 71 years old. I've been in healthcare since my 20s. I'm disappointed with the impact of money. I don't have a solution, but it's something that people need to be very aware of when they're seeking medical care how has this care really been validated? So on that dismal note, looking back at my career, that's where I see things are. In our area, for example, which is, we're filling this gap of providing people with data about their sexual health. Well, there's no CPT code for that. Basically what we've done with our company is come up with the equivalent of electrocardiogram stress test for men's sexual health. There's no box to check. So there's the point I'm making is this should have happened a long time ago. The sensors that we're using were available in the late 80s, early 90s. And it kind of takes me aback pretty much two or three times a week. How did this fall into my hands? How did I end up doing this? Because, and part of that is I'm not solely motivated by money. I am older. I am comfortable in terms of my means, so I can focus on something I think is going to be a legacy. I think what we're doing by providing men with data about their sexual health will allow men to, as the cliche goes, to track it. If you track it, you can hack it. And what we're doing is very disruptive, because men with erectile dysfunction will walk on their hands and knees on broken glass to get a solution. And as a consequence, they do a lot of things that can't be evaluated. So the shockwave therapy, growth hormone injections, plasma injections, shock therapy, testosterone injections, all sorts of nutraceuticals, all sorts of pills and supplements that are marketed to men. It's multi billion industry. Asia is part of that as well too. And we're very disruptive, because what we're doing is saying, hey, look, with our device, you can now say, what works for me? I'm going to get actionable personal data, from this technology. And I'll tell you that on the supplement side, we haven't found a single oral supplement that works. We haven't found, for example, the PDE5 medications, Cialis, Viagra being the big ones, they're actually not that effective. They put more blood into the penis, but they don't keep it there. But utilizing our technology, men can assess what's the right dose for me, et cetera. So what we're doing is transformational and very exciting.
Erectile dysfunction is a very sensitive subject matter from which rarely talks about. Statistically, there are 30% of men at the age of 30 suffer from ED, and this number increases 10% every decade of age, after which we can somehow be attributed to different health factors. Hence, what are the things that you can recommend in this subject matter from a medical perspective is concerned?
Well, this is a real pandemic. 50% of men age 50 around the world experience erectile dysfunction. The numbers are enormous. And the highest incidences of erectile dysfunction are actually in Mexico, Persian Gulf, and in Asia. There may well be cultural factors, but overall, the things that contribute to this are obesity, lack of exercise, anxiety, and social media certainly is aggravating anxiety, hypertension, diabetes. And then we also take a lot more medications than people ever did in the past. And the doctors are to some degree at fault here, because the antihypertensives and the anti-stress, antidepressant medications are suppressors of sex drive and sexual performance. And doctors, I suspect in Asia, as in the United States, we don't ask people about their sexual health, and we should. We owe it to them, because it's not sexual health is key to people's personal happiness, the success of their relationships, their partnerships, and it also is a reflection of their cardiovascular health. And I was really unaware of that profound association until I got involved in this work. So I'll give you two examples of that. So if people have sex regularly, and I mean every day, people have sex, men who age 50 to 55, one study, who have sex every day for 2 weeks, their cortisol level goes down by half. Well, cortisol is a stress hormone. That's a significant impact. There's a large study out of the UK showing that men over the age of 72, I think, 72 or 75, who have sex two times a week decrease the risk of a cardiovascular event by 50%. Well, you're not going to live forever by having sex, a lot of sex. You might be happier, but you're going to that's important. So it really behooves doctors to ask these questions, and they don't. So people need to ask themselves. And now with wearables, people can actually assess their sexual health at home in privacy without embarrassment.
That's a very good point, Dr. Justin. What are some other intimacy wearables that are shaping the market? And how can these devices potentially save lives?
Well, for intimacy devices, there really aren't that many. So I'll cover the market right now. On the female side, there's one vibrator called the Lioness. I think some of the research was done in Singapore for that. But the Lioness basically is measuring vaginal contractions during orgasm. So utilizing that device, women can measure the impact of various things upon that. But it's not measuring the health of the clitoris. And the clitoris, like the penis, is really the key to female sexuality. And I will share with you, we can discuss this later on, that we have developed the world's first device to assess clitoral health. On the male side, before I talk about our device, there are this company called MyHixel that has a device for training for men who have premature ejaculation to train themselves with an interactive online program to overcome that disorder. There's a company, Israeli company called Intu, IN2, that has a neurostimulator patch that goes behind the testicles to delay ejaculation. That's just entering the market in the UK right now. There's an American company called Morari, MORARI, that hopes to do something similar in the United States, although they're seeking funding. They're further away. And then in the UK, there's a product called the Adam, ADAM. They're our competitor, but I'll tell you about them. The Adam basically counts the number of nocturnal erections that are leading indicator of man's cardiovascular health and measures their duration. It cannot be worn during sex. So our device is different. The Adam is just barely in the market. We're in the market. We're available. We ship worldwide. But what we've done with our device is embed sensors into what is now a smart cock ring. But if I could just back up a moment to talk about what I meant by leading indicator before. So about 3+ years ago, I was working as a medical technology consultant, and I was approached by a urologist who heard that I conducted an experiment that I call Project O, for obvious reasons, to try to modulate human sexual response. My interest at that time was in men and women who had spinal cord injuries or have multiple sclerosis or other diseases that impact the spinal cord and cannot perform sexually. What has been done to try to rehabilitate them? And there were 5 research papers around the world claiming that by implanting an electrode by the cavernous nerve, everyone's favorite nerve no one's heard about, it's a nerve responsible for orgasms, they were able to produce erections and ejaculation. And I tested that out on 2 rams, male sheep, achieved erection ejaculation, but also defecation and urination. So it wasn't exactly bedroom friendly. So I then actually had implanted electrode myself done by a friend of mine, a surgeon, and experienced nothing. So this urologist heard about this experiment, was intrigued by my interest, and said, look, I want to count the number of nocturnal erections that men have because they're the indicator of man's cardiovascular health. And my eyes lit up, like, leading indicator. Now, in medicine, high blood pressure is associated with stroke and heart attack and kidney failure. And we jump all over that. We have a whole medical industry focused on addressing people's high blood pressure, which is just an association. A leading indicator means it's predictive. So I was certainly aware that men have an erection in the morning. I'm a man, but I was unaware of that men are supposed to have 3 to 5 erections per night while they're sleeping. So to come up with a way of counting them would be profoundly valuable. It would be a sixth vital sign, because if that number goes down, a man is going to have, highly likely to have, a heart attack or stroke in the next 2 or 3 years. So looking ahead to the future, I'm confident that counting nocturnal erections, their duration, their firmness, will become part of what men expect data their doctors to collect or to want to collect if they're over the age of 40 or 45, or if they have diabetes or hypertension, and so many men do. So when this doctor came to me and said, I want to count nocturnal erections, I thought, well, we can do better than that. Let's come up with something that can not only be worn overnight, let's come up with something to be worn during sex. Because what are men more concerned about? What's happening overnight while they're sleeping, or what's happening when they're trying to perform? So our device can be worn during masturbation or during sexual intercourse. It can be worn overnight. We measure the firmness and duration of erections. So our scope of data goes way beyond, what Adam is doing.
That's quite interesting, Dr. Justin. Being a medical practitioner, can erectile dysfunction be an early warning sign of current and future heart problems?
As I said before, it's a leading indicator, and men need to pay more attention to it. So it's one thing for a 25-year-old man who has erectile dysfunction to go online and get pills. It's another thing for someone who's over the age of 45, who's at risk of atherosclerotic disease, or someone who has diabetes or hypertension, to do that. So in addition to which, erectile dysfunction can also be a warning sign of a significant set of medication side effects. So one of our goals with our technology, we don't have this capability yet, but we're working on it, is to embed sensors into our smart cock ring that will actually allow us to measure the calcification of small arteries and small veins in the genitals. And that will essentially allow men to have an at-home full catheterization, but I'll put it this way: if your vessels in your genitals are clogged, they're clogged in your heart, and there will be a correlation, and so this will actually be a way for men to monitor if men are monitoring their erectile. We call it erectile fitness, but if men are monitoring their erectile fitness with our technology, they will be able to see whether their erectile dysfunction is due to cardiovascular disease, medication side effects, or whether it's just due to some other cause, such as anxiety. Or here are two extremes in which our device has been used. We had a 26-year-old man who recently married, trying to have a child by his wife, and they both had moved, they both had new jobs, they were attributing their difficulties to distress. And his wife, who's a lawyer involved with technology, she heard about a device, bought it for him. He didn't want to use it at first because, hey, I don't need this. And it turned out that he only was having 2 weak nocturnal erections per night. He should be having 3 to 5. So if a guy that age should be having 5 strong nocturnal erections per night. He then got a workup, and he had a significant adrenal problem. And he would not have known that without the technology. At the other extreme, our oldest, I call him patients, but they're really customers. I call them that because I'm a doctor. But our oldest customer was 82 years old. His wife was in her early 60s. And their complaint was that for the last 15 months, they've been unable to have successful intercourse. He used our device. He had very weak nocturnal erections. He was taking five medications that could have an impact on his sexual performance. Of course, the doctors never speak to each other. He's seeing more than one doctor. Patients are reluctant to question their doctors about their medications. And I made some recommendations. I don't know, most people just act on their own. I had to tell him to tell his doctors what he was doing, but he eliminated three of his medications. And his wife were able to resume successful sexual relations two times a week about 6 weeks later. And they're happy. They both even know that it happens. That's, I'm not going to say it's necessarily life saving, but that's life changing in terms of the quality of life.
I understand, Dr. Justin, that you're the founder and CEO of FirmTech. Perhaps you can tell us more about FirmTech and its related products.
Yeah, so this we have three products. One product is the wearable, and this is really our premier product. It's called the Tech Ring, and it is made out, unlike most cock rings, it is made out of elastomer, so it's soft and flexible. It's adjustable, so it will fit any size. So it doesn't come, most of the rings are like, they're these hard silicone gaskets or nooses. This one is flexible and adjustable. We have a Bluetooth enabled app. The Bluetooth is turned off when it's on the body, because there are people concerned about the radiation from the Bluetooth. Although it's a heck of a lot of radiation people get from the cell phones, but it's turned off. We provide people with experience, kind of like Auras, which is one of the smart rings. We give people a score. We give people the last month's data. We send notifications. So, for example, if you're doing better, you get a notification. If you're doing worse, you get a notification. And we provide people with actionable data about their sexual health. Our other two products, we are adding other sensors to it to be candid, I would say our device is like the equivalent right now of a flip phone, which is a lot of revolutionary in its time, but our next generation devices will be like a Tesla. They'll be we're going to be able to give people so much information about their overall sexual health just by this wearable that goes in the penis. Our other devices are non-technological. They are erection rings that are specifically designed to produce a more intense orgasm for a man. No one has ever done this before. Our goal was to put the right amount of pressure over the urethra to prolong the ejaculation in order to produce a more intense orgasm. Our devices, unlike other rings, do not block the arterial flow into the penis. They can be put on when a man's flaccid, but they do constrain the venous return. So they can be put on discreetly. They don't have to be put on just when a man is aroused. And a lot of men really enjoy that because they don't want to have the pressure of, oh, now I finally have an erection. I could put this, put the ring on. So, but the premier product is the Tech Ring. That's what we're most proud about, because that's what's going to change the field of urology by providing men and their doctors with data that currently is not there. So, if I'm 71, if I went to my cardiologist and told him I'm short of breath or I have chest pain, and he just listened with a stethoscope and felt my pulse and told me I'm okay, I would think, what is 1880? I want a CT calcium score angiogram, I want an electrocardiogram, I want a stress test, I want a blood test. And unfortunately, the urologists don't have anything. Now they do. Our device is being used at major centers in the United States, Mount Sinai in New York, Baylor in Texas, University of Utah, Memorial Sloan Kettering, et cetera. So, there are quite a few research papers. There are four papers that have been accepted for publication already. There'll be another four this year. What we're doing is going to change the practice of urology and sexology.
Can you kindly share, Dr. Justin, how these technologies could be beneficial for people with certain health conditions like diabetes or heart disease, for instance?
Well, we're giving people an additional parameter to follow. So with diabetes, people in general follow the hemoglobin A1C. And that is just a reflective blood test. It's just a reflection of how they've been processing sugar over the last 3 months. It's not telling them what's going on right now. So if you had a diabetic who had four nocturnal reactions and he went to two, that person needs more immediate attention. The other part of diabetes, which our devices can help people, is actually mechanical, because erectile function really depends upon three things: the blood flow, a strong pump, strong heart, blood flow, good pipes, arteries and veins, and good nerves. Diabetics have neurovascular dysfunction. Their nerves and their blood vessels start to fail. They commonly develop venous insufficiency on the venous side. The smooth muscle around their veins no longer holds the blood in the penis when they have an erection. And on the arterial side, it takes them longer to get an erection because the blood flow in is constrained. So the advantage of our device is it helps them to sustain erection. So once blood goes in, our ring will hold the blood in place and helps them to help them sustain erection. Men with hypertension also have significant problems. They have the neurological problems, but they have the same vascular problems that diabetics do. So our device one helps use count by counting nocturnal erections and assessing the duration of firmness of all the erections. If things start to deteriorate, it's, as I said before, it's a leading indicator. It's not just an association that their cardiovascular disease is getting worse. Plus, on the mechanical side, our device is a comfortable solution to their difficulty in sustaining an erection.
Could you kindly discuss, Dr. Justin, the importance of addressing this, what we call venous leak syndrome, and its impact on erectile function? And how does FirmTech's approach differ from traditional treatments?
Well, urologists tend to think of venous leak syndrome as something that men are born with. And a very small number of men are born with incompetent muscles or valves on their veins and their penis. So they get an erection, and then the blood goes in, the blood flows out. But everyone, as they get older, gets what we call at FirmTech venous insufficiency. And we're trying to popularize that phrase because the urologists recognize this is an issue as well too. So what is venous insufficiency? I'll illustrate with myself, for example. I'm 71 years old. If I sit on a plane, if I flew to Singapore and I get off the plane, my socks are going to be tight. I'm not going to be able to get the rings off my fingers, because as you get older, the smooth muscle around your small veins, your venules, they atrophy, and they get weak. And it's one of the reasons why it's harder for a man my age to sustain an erection. In many cases, attain an erection, but really sustain an erection. So our solution is mechanical. Our solution is to provide men with a comfortable erection ring that will help them to sustain erection. So we have internal data, and there will be two independent studies. They're going to validate this. This demonstrate the value of our device for men who have this problem. So there are no studies until ours of detumescence. So what is detumescence? Tumescence is an erection, medical word. Detumescence is the time it takes for an erection to go down. So the longer it takes an erection to go down, the more the blood that's held in the penis. The harder, therefore, the harder the erection, the more satisfying the sexual pleasure. So we studied 21 men, age 27 to 70. I was the oldest man in the study. For detumescence time, the average erection went down about 30 to 35 seconds with nothing. With tadalafil, which is Cialis, which is the most popular PDE5 medication, it went down a little bit over 2 minutes. Bear in mind that Cialis puts more blood in the penis, but doesn't keep it there. It's not a good solution, therefore, for a venous leak or a venous insufficiency. Our ring specifically, kept men hard for over 4 minutes after climax, and the two together, a little bit over 5 minutes. So the takeaway really for men is, if you want to be harder and last longer, have more sexual satisfaction for that matter, put a ring on it. And if you want to take it further, put a ring on it and take a pill, but the ring is more effective than the pill. And that's transformational, because all around the world, all around the world, men have been trained by pharma, by marketing, by advertising, to take pills whether they need them or not. And the pill, the placebo, if you go back to the original papers for Viagra, it wasn't much better, that much better than placebo. And I prescribe, you know, I have men who I prescribe to Tadalafil or Viagra to tell me that they don't actually need it. They just like having it in their wallet or on their night table. So that would, so we're not talking about something that's particularly effective, whereas the rings are a mechanical solution to venous leak and to venous insufficiency and should be considered before surgery.
Can you kindly elaborate, Dr. Justin, on how these devices contribute to our understanding of human health and wellness? And furthermore, could you also kindly share with our listeners some success stories from users of these devices?
Sure. Well, we're providing people with information about their sexual health, and that reflects the cardiovascular health, or information about their medications that they simply couldn't get otherwise. So, and with this information, men and healthcare providers can measure the impact of diseases, diabetes, hypertension. They can track their impact on the sexual performance. They can measure the impact of medications, supplements, diets, exercise, regimen. So by providing people with knowledge, we're hoping that people will enjoy better sexual health, better overall cardiovascular health, and better relationships. I mean, this is an area that's so critical to people's self-esteem and people's happiness. In terms of success stories, when I went into this area, I never was thinking about how it would help men with prostate disease. I'm not a urologist by background, after prostate surgery, 30% to 70% of men never recover their sexual function. And one of the reasons why men don't recover the sexual function is they give up on the rehabilitation, because most men will not really recover fully for 12 to 18 months. And in the interim, they are asked to do pelvic floor exercises, pump their penis regularly, take medications, take injections, and they don't see anything. They don't see progress. But we have prostate surgeons and nerve practitioners involved in the rehabilitation, and men who are utilizing our device to see that, gee, I'm not seeing anything down there, but I can see on my app that I'm now recovering nocturnal erections. So what I'm doing is working. And that's been really rewarding. We've had we've had quite a few people after prostate surgery talk about how valuable the data has been to them. In addition to which, on the mechanical side, most of these, as I discussed, most of these erection rings are made out of hard silicone. They're tight, they're uncomfortable, they can only be worn for 20 or 30 minutes. Ours can be worn for hours. Well, most people, especially older people, need more time and want to enjoy more time, making love. So we have people who go from not being able to starting to get an erection, but not being hard enough penetration, use our rings and be able to perform successfully again. And that's life changing, for people. We have had two men that I'm aware of who've emailed me saying that as a consequence of their declining number of nocturnal erections, or their absence, they realize that the erectile dysfunction is not psychological or not relationship oriented, but it's actually physiological, who went off and got cardiac workups and had they might have died. I can't say I actually saved life, so to speak, but they got cardiac workups way before they got a heart attack or got a stroke or some other problem, because they became aware of the cardiovascular issue through monitoring their sexual health. And other success stories, we have so many people who are taking medications that beta blockers for high blood pressure or antidepressants, who feel that they need those medications, but as a consequence can't achieve a satisfactory erection, who use our rings and now are able to perform sexually. So it's been really I really regard what I'm working on here, this project, as a legacy. I founded many companies before on the service side. I've had, personally, I've had six startups. I've had four successful exits, mostly on the service side in healthcare. But once you sell a company in the service sector, it ends up in someone's hands, and who knows what happens to the quality. With this device, it might not be us who makes, quote, the big money, but the data, the scoring that we're developing will change healthcare. It will become, I'm confident that what we're doing will become the standard of care, standard for care, and the standard for research in urology and sexology in the future. And that 3 to 5 years from now, if a young man like you, Edgar, goes to see their cardiologist or internist for a physical, and you're over the age of 40 or 45, or you have a medical problem, they're going to want to know your score.
In consideration of data privacy, Dr. Justin, how do these devices gather and ensure the security of user data?
Good question. The data is stored in the cloud. So Amazon Web Services is privacy compliant. It's probably the major server for healthcare in the United States, maybe even worldwide. I don't know, but I know it is in the United States. So it's HIPAA compliant. So if a person utilizes our service, we gather very little basic information, but we do have your email. So when it goes to the cloud and gets analyzed, that your personal information, your home information, if you will, is turned into numbers. So the only thing that's accessible to us on our side of the company is anonymous data. We have no access to anyone's personal data without their permission. There's only one person in the company who has that access, who's our chief technical officer, and he has a HIPAA contract, which basically says we could kill him if he violates it. No, we couldn't kill him, but the penalties would be severe. It's a felony, actually, to violate. So, could this data be hacked? Well, anything could be hacked, unfortunately. But we are as compliant as we possibly can be. We do have people who are concerned and use a VPN to enter this. We have people who create alternative email addresses. I mean, there are things that people can do to further protect themselves. But we really haven't had we haven't had any issues and don't expect to have any issues.
From your perspective, Dr. Justin, what role does technology play in shaping the future of sexual wellness and healthcare?
It's going to be revolutionary. The sensor array that we're going to be adding to our device, for the next 3 years, starting in 25, we're going to be making one major advance after another. We will be able to assess, for example, muscles in the pelvic floor. We will be able to measure the oxygen content of blood in the penis when aroused and when not aroused. We will be able to, as I indicated before, to evaluate calcifications in the vasculature. Will even be able to tell you how many calories you're expending while having intercourse. So the changes are going to be significant. On the female side, we have invented the world's first monitor of clitoral health. And we are hoping to raise money for that. I have funded this company. I don't have the funds to fund to fund another company, and we're looking to raise another $1.5 million to take the female device that's already been demonstrated in two research papers, to take that device to commercialization. So women have even more sexual health issues than men do. And it's not because of the patriarchy, although they might want to think that. It's postmenopausal women, premenopausal women have protection against, some relative protection against atherosclerosis, diabetic vascular changes, hypertensive vascular changes that men don't have. But postmenopausal women, they have all the same problems that men do with cardiovascular diseases. Premenopausal women, on the hand, take hormones for birth control, and they take SSRI antidepressants five or six times as much as men do. And both those medications have significant impact on women's sexual performance. And if women could have a device where they could actually assess the impact of those things, they could titrate the dose, they could hack it and get and have better outcomes. So we hope to commercialize that female device in probably the second quarter of 2025.
Very well said. Are there any initiatives that you're working on, Dr. Justin, that you would like to share with our podcast listening audience? Moreover, where can listeners learn more? And most importantly, what are the easiest way of reaching you?
Certainly. So the most exciting thing working on right now, two exciting things I just alluded to just a moment ago, which is adding additional sensors to the male device that will make it more sensitive and specific, give people more information about their health, and then developing the female device. So I can be reached at Elliot, E-L-L-I-O-T, at myfirmtech, myfirmtch.com. You can find us online at myfirmtech.com. We're in LinkedIn and Instagram as well. But I'd welcome the conversation if people are interested in how the technology works, whether the device would benefit them. They should really feel free to reach out to me in person. We've sold about 12,000 units. But the company is still small enough that I welcome the opportunity to still speak to people directly, because I want to improve what we're doing, and I want to learn what people would want to know that would make our message more compelling.
Thanks so much, Dr. Justin, for sharing us your valuable insights on the sexual wellness, as well as the critical importance of our wearable technology to healthcare and to our virtual economy. We wish you all the best and great success on your future endeavors.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you for the opportunity to come on your show.
We would like to express our sincere gratitude to Dr. Elliot Justin on sharing us his insightful views on wearable technology and its significant importance to healthcare and our digital society. We would like to hear from you. Share us your thoughts regarding our topics and send us a message on the Anchor voice message box. Your message could end up on our future podcast episode. Make sure you never miss any episodes of FinCircle by clicking the subscribe button or follow us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, Breaker, Google Podcasts, Radio Public, Pocket Cast, Audible, Overcast, TuneIn, CastBox, iHeartRadio, Anchor.fm, and affiliated podcast platforms. You can also reach us on our website at pincircle@wordpress.com and our Facebook page at FinCircle Podcast. This concludes our podcast episode today. Thank you for listening on FinCircle. This is Ed Angelus. Let's catch up again soon.